Coming up on New York Now, we'll review the contentious gubernatorial debate, likely the only one between Andrew Cuomo and Mark Molinaro.
Do you support Donald Trump?
Let's get out of this conversation.
Do you support Donald Trump?
I support anyone who is going to effectively make an investment.
Do you support Donald Trump?
Mr.
Do you support Donald Trump?
Mr. Molinaro,
you can't answer it.
And we'll talk North Country politics with journalist Tom Halleck.
Elise Stefanik did hold two town hall meetings back in the spring in April, one
we
in Monroe.
One in Glens Falls.
And we were at the other up in Moriah.
This one was at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
That's been
one of the biggest complaints that the time she has held the open forum meetings, they've been during a weekday in the middle of the day, and a lot of people haven't been able to attend.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, I'm Casey Seiler of the Times Union. Welcome to New York Now. My partner Matt Ryan will join us in just a bit. Well, it is debate high season here in New York, and to help me analyze it, I am joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. So, Karen, the biggest matchup of the week that saw a lot of them was the mano-a-mano, and it was very mono to be sure, between Republican Mark Molinaro and Governor Andrew Cuomo.
I know, and I have to say this, even though it's been so overused, the Lincoln-Douglas debate, as they say, it was not.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to have some clips of it later, and ordinarily reporters will put the clips on that are, you know, the most contentious, the most heated, and kind of ignore the rest of the debate. But I think the whole debate...
It was the whole debate.
It was just so heated and intense, mostly because Governor Cuomo set the tone of it. He just would let no charge go unanswered. He talked over the moderators, and the intensity of it kind of, you know, marred any understanding of what any of the issues were. I think at the end of it, if you looked at it and thought, well, where did they stand on this? Where did they stand on that? You wouldn't know.
Right. You also wouldn't know that upstate New York really existed.
Is it part of New York? I guess not.
The only upstate specific question got asked more than 50 minutes into the hour-long debate, and it concerned whether or not the Buffalo Bills was going to get a new stadium. I mean, we're talking in the capital region, but I don't think that serves the needs of upstate.
I have to say that is such a New York City type question, that the only thing upstate is the Buffalo Bills in the state in their stadium, because that's probably the only thing they've heard of. No, upstate was not addressed at all. And as far as we know so far, there's not going to be an upstate debate where Governor Cuomo participates. Though he's invited to one for the League of Women Voters on November 1st, and all four other candidates have accepted, but he has not accepted yet. We'll see in the coming week if there's pressure for him to show up.
Well, let's get back to the WCBS debate from Tuesday. Let's watch a clip, and this one is on the very, of course, loaded subject of corruption.
The Tinkleman employees' salary didn't go in your pocket after you had given them a contract and then gave them a second contract?
Governor, you failed to disclose it?
Rich has a question.
The governor leveled a charge, and he has been now speaking almost without pause.
Just tell me what's false.
Joe Prococo making 800 phone calls from your very office exchanging...
Yes, he made phone calls. He shouldn't have.
While you were there, sir.
Let me finish.
Is this what we do all day? No. Let me finish my thought
before you finish it. Joe Prococo. This is about you,
Elaine,
and me.
You're right.
No one's saying I did anything wrong.
And, of course, just to offer context there, that is, of course, Mr. Molinaro attacking over the upstate development scandal involving Joe Prococo, the governor's former executive deputy secretary. Cuomo responding with an allegation that we've heard a lot in the last couple of weeks that Molinaro's wife got a job with a company that received a county contract, a charge that Molinaro has disputed vociferously.
Yeah, without context, it's two politicians each accusing each other of corruption. So if you're a viewer, you wouldn't really know what to think. You'd say they're both corrupt, and there wasn't really time to set that up. I don't know if it was the moderator's job or not to give some stop them and give some context with that. I mean, Molinaro was, in fairness to him, he was trying to hold his own, but he was just getting overpowered, and there wasn't really the time, as you just did, to set this up and explain exactly what they were talking about. So I think also, that harmed Molinaro.
You saw there something that Molinaro tried to do, which was to refer to Cuomo as sir over and over again as kind of to interrupt him or to kind of stop the onslaught. It didn't quite work.
Or maybe to show that, you know, he's much younger than Cuomo, because you usually address sir to an elder or something like that. So I don't know. I think he was trying to show, I'm being very civil here, and you're not.
All right. Well, let's look at another clip. And this one involves what I think we would probably agree was one of the biggest hits of the night that the governor landed. And this involves a polarizing figure in the person of President Donald J. Trump.
I'm surprised it took him this long to go there. But, sir, I've been in elected office for a very long time. I was in office before you. I was in office before Mr. Trump.
Yes, you're a lifetime politician. We know.
Your private law firm represented Mr. Trump and his real estate interests before state agencies while your father was governor. You accepted $60,000 from Donald Trump and haven't returned it. You, when you were trying to make friends with the president when he first came to office, told him you wouldn't run against him. And you, sir, had him at your bachelor party. I didn't. So at the end of the day, sir, I have a long record of committing to help those who are most vulnerable. I grew up on food stamps.
Are you saying you don't support Donald Trump?
I'm saying that I'm absolutely committed to the delivery of mental health services.
Do you support Donald Trump?
Let's get out of this conversation.
Do you support Donald Trump?
I support anyone who is going to effectively make an investment.
Do you support Donald Trump? Do you support Donald Trump?
Mr. Molinaro,
you can't answer it.
Ouch. I mean, yeah. I am surprised that considering that Molinaro had that long recitation of the relationship that goes back decades between Trump and Governor Cuomo, that he wasn't prepared to answer on the subject of his own support or lack thereof for Trump.
Yeah, he needed to answer that. If he does support Trump in some cases, he needed to clearly spell out why, because it just made it look like he didn't want to answer because Trump is a controversial figure. And yeah, I think that did really hurt Molinaro, because that clip got used everywhere. And I'm just going to hazard a guess here. I would say most New Yorkers did not watch this debate, or if even they turned it on, they probably turned it off after 10 minutes because
it's
the intensity
was too
yeah. stressful. It really was. I have to admit, it gave me a headache just to watch it. I have to do it for my job, and I'm used to this sort of thing.
All right, now let's look at one more clip. This one, very contentious, on the subject of a bill that Molinaro supported when he was in the state legislature that involved the shackling of female prisoners during childbirth.
It's disgusting to the values of this country to have a president take babies out of the arms of mothers and put them in cages and shackle women. Where do you think you want to take this country and state?
Sir, in 1997,
please.
In 1997, a four-year-old girl and her mother were raped in my hometown. That has seared my memory,
so
sir.
So you want to shackle the woman to a gurney?
I absolutely do not, sir. I do not, sir. And you know better than that.
But then why did you vote for the bill?
You absolutely understood, and exactly Governor
Patterson. Why did you vote for the bill?
Governor Patterson explained the same concerns which were addressed, and I support what he did to ensure that those women that are violent.
That is a lie.
It is not a lie.
201 legislators, only 20 voted for it. You were one of 20 out of 200. That's what you call extreme, my friend.
Ouch. Yeah. I mean, Cuomo really hit him on the question of whether that was an extreme position.
Yeah, and once again, Molinaro did not really give all of that good an answer to explain something that really sounded terrible, the way that Cuomo was putting it. So yeah, I mean, I think Molinaro held his own, considering that Cuomo just really is a steamroller. But, you know, these key points, he just didn't give a good explanation. And the problem for Molinaro is nobody knows him in New York State. And this was his introduction to many voters and viewers, and they weren't able to get a lot out of it. I would say partly because there was no opening and closing statement. And I think that those really are important, particularly for the challenger, because you get to make your case in your own words. This is who I am. This is some of my backstory. This is what I want to do. And you know, and sometimes it does help the incumbent. I guess Governor Cuomo doesn't think it helps him, because he's been in two debates now where there's been no opening and no closing statements.
We've been, we've been talking about this. Molinaro is down by, I believe, more than 20 points now in most of the polls.
Yeah.
He needed to crush Cuomo, and even just
that
what
wasn't going to happen.
What in Vegas is referred to as a push is not nearly good enough for him.
Yeah, just showing that he could hold his own. But as we just showed in those clips, there were key times when he couldn't. So yeah, it didn't really help him, I think. And in New York City, Cuomo is way ahead. He's going to get most of the votes anyway, so I don't know how much traction he could have gained. In an upstate debate, he might have gained more traction, which is probably why we're not having one with Governor Cuomo in it, because why should Governor Cuomo do that? He's not going to do well upstate. Yeah. He doesn't need upstate voters. He has the New York City voters, and I think he's fairly confident that he has the Long Island suburban voters, enough of them. So for him, you know, just ride it out.
Speaking of upstate debates, there was supposed to be one on the campus of Skidmore College up in Saratoga Springs on Sunday night, last Sunday night, between Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and her Republican opponent, Shelley Farley. That did not happen because Gillibrand did not want to cross a picket line set up by Workers for Charter Communications, which is the parent corporation of New York One and Spectrum News that was sponsoring that debate. Instead, what we got was a WABC debate on Thursday that lasted all of 30 minutes.
Yeah, and it was in the middle of the day, and, you know, frankly, I don't think even most reporters watched it, but I guess that benefits Gillibrand since she is way ahead in the polls. And I have to say, that's a trend that Governor Cuomo started boycotting Spectrum News because they had invited him to have a debate. And he said, no, I can't because of this union dispute that's been going on for about a year and a half. But that hasn't stopped him from appearing very frequently on New York One in the past year. But, you know, all of a sudden it's become an issue. And those would be well-watched debates. Spectrum, New York One, they have the statewide network. They can show excerpts of it over and over again in the newscasts. You know, even if people are just turning in for the weather to those stations, they're going to see that.
The union appears to be picking and choosing which debates they are actually going to picket. One between Representative John Faso and Antonio Delgado, his opponent, actually went forward. The union essentially stood down. There's a question now as to whether or not one involving the attorney general candidates, including Tish James, is actually going to go forward for the same reason.
And the controller candidates. As far as I know, they haven't backed out of that one. So, yeah, I don't know. But, you know, time's running out. It's going to be election day, and this is not a season where we've had a lot of satisfying debates so far.
Something else we should touch on is, of course, Wednesday and Thursday, and, of course, into Friday now. The suspicious devices, pipe bombs that have been found either mailed to or showing up in the mail at the homes of, there's no other way to put it, opponents of Donald Trump, including New Yorkers such as George Soros, the Clintons, the Manhattan headquarters of CNN, and only now Friday morning we're hearing about one that was apparently on its way to the Camden offices of Cory Booker just over the border in New Jersey.
Yeah, very, very disturbing, very unsettling. Governor Cuomo has been all over the airwaves talking about that. He didn't used to go on the airwaves when there was disasters like this, wondering, is he setting up for 2020? Is he simply doing his job as governor, getting information out? He is presenting himself as the alternative to Trump. And he continued that, though he did pull back on some of his, you know, harsh criticisms of the president that he'd been doing in the last few days.
All right. Well, that is where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. In this week's New York Now poll question, we're asking, do you think Andrew Cuomo will appear at the upstate gubernatorial debate, which is scheduled for Thursday night at Albany's College of St. Rose? Right now, he is the only one of the five candidates on the ballot who has yet to confirm. You can vote at nynow.org. It's where you can find all the links to follow us on social media, as well as a link to my paper's Capital Confidential blog. You can also find it at timesunion.com. Well, for the rest of today's show, we send it on up to Plattsburgh and my colleague, Matt Ryan.
All right, thank you, Casey, and it's great to be back in Plattsburgh at Mountain Lake PBS, where I'm happy to be joined by Tom Halleck, producer and host of Mountain Lake Journal, which you can watch at mountainlake.org. Tom, thanks for having us up for our annual conversation.
Good to be with you, as always.
Viewers saw your interview last week with North Country Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. She is the youngest woman ever elected to Congress, although that record will break in a few weeks when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is expected to win her Queens congressional race. This has been a different term for Stefanik. Under Donald Trump, she's had to deal with some of his tweets, some of his comments, which have angered people. She's tries to be a very bipartisan legislator. How has she fared here under Trump?
And she touts her bipartisan.
Yes.
That she's a moderate, that she works across the aisle with Democrats. It's been challenging, I think, for a lot of Republicans having to walk that political tightrope. She, as you said, there are times when his what he says, his tweets, are controversial, offensive. She's had to respond to those a number of times. Most recently was after the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing when the president mimicked or mocked Dr. Blasey Ford, and she had to respond to that. Other times, it's been the policies that she's disagreed with him on. When it comes to climate change, she thought it was a mistake to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord. She voted against the tax bill because of what it does to New Yorkers and not being able to deduct state and local taxes. Tariffs, she doesn't like the tariffs. She does agree with him and likes the new NAFTA deal that's been worked out, but at times wasn't very happy about how the administration dealt with Canada and some of the hardball tactics, because Canada is the number one trade partner up here, so there was some concern about that.
And she really angered the left, maybe some people in the middle, when she voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. This was in the spring
of May of 2017.
Yeah. I remember seeing video from outside. You had a town hall with her.
We did. We had a town hall with about 100 people here
outside.
And probably 100, 200 protesters outside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's still the number one issue for many people here. When we had our debate this week and we asked viewers to send in questions, the overwhelming majority of the questions had to do with the Affordable Care Act and health care.
I live about 15 miles outside of New York 21, so I pay pretty close attention to what's going on in the district. And a lot of the critics who like to hammer Elise Stefanik criticize her for her lack of accessibility, lack of town halls, lack of public appearances. They use the hashtag elusive Elise. Mm-hmm. How fair is that, do you think? You've been up here for a long time.
Well, a lot of this came about after Trump's election. You remember, a lot of people got politically active and motivated and got out. And those are a lot of the people that really wanted to be able to have meetings face-to-face in public with Elise Stefanik and other members of Congress to let them know what they think of their policies, to protest. And I think they're unhappy that there haven't been more town hall meetings in large venues on weekends or nights where people can come out and ask questions and be combative and can confront members of Congress. Elise Stefanik did hold two town hall meetings back in the spring in April, one
we
in Moreau.
One in Glens Falls.
And
like
we were at
said,
the other
was,
up in Moriah.
This one was at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
On a
and
Wednesday
so that's been one of the biggest complaints, that the time she has held the open forum meetings, they've been during a weekday in the middle of the day and a lot of people haven't been able to attend.
Mountain Lake PBS did have a debate, as we mentioned, a couple days ago. It was Stefanik, Democrat Tedra Cobb, and Green Party candidate Lynn Kahn. Let's hear from Cobb here, the Democrat, criticizing Stefanik for her vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act.
I am in this race because Elise Stefanik voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. That is the long and short. I have spent my life's career in my community working to improve access to health care. The things that Elise Stefanik has just mentioned, going to a doctor twice a year, what does it matter if you go to a doctor twice a year when you can't pay for any follow-up care? What we need is a commitment that every person in this country has portable and affordable health care. It could be Medicare for all. It could be Medicare expansion and the ACA expansion. I am not starting with the solution, I'm starting with the problem. And it's a moral problem, it's a fairness problem, and it's killing us economically and literally. The Healthcare Association of New York State asked Elise Stefanik and this Congress, every congressional representative, not to repeal the Affordable Care Act without a replacement. And yet they did, kicking 64,000 of our friends and neighbors off of their health care, closing off hospitals and nursing homes and health care centers.
Cobb's background is in health care, so this topic, Tom, was right in her wheelhouse. Tell us a little bit more about her.
And as you heard from her, she said this is the reason she ran.
Right.
That when Elise Stefanik voted to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, that's when she decided she was going to run for Congress. So she's made this the big issue. She has talked about how if the Republicans have their way, if the Affordable Care Act goes away, that tens of thousands of people could lose their coverage, have to pay higher premiums. Of course, the concern about people with pre-existing conditions. So this has really been, for her, one of her big issues.
All right, I want to get to one more clip here. The question was about military spending, and the late John McCain's name was brought up. Cobb said that Stefanik did not honor him at Fort Drum when she was there in August with the president to sign the National Defense Authorization Act. Stefanik said he had supported her campaign and she considered him a friend. You might remember, though, his name was not mentioned that day up at Fort Drum. He and President Trump, of course, were not close. McCain helped defeat the ACA repeal back in 2017, and Stefanik's answer did not please Green Party candidate Lynn Kahn.
John McCain might have been your friend, but you didn't have the courage when you were standing on that stage to announce that authorization to say his name. And you don't have the courage to talk about the national security implications of climate change in public, on the floor of the House. You've said more today than I've seen you and heard you say in 4 years. Don't interrupt me.
What does more deserve?
Don't interrupt me.
I'll do a follow-up, Tom.
All right, quite the exchange there.
One of the more livelier moments of the debate.
Well, what can you tell us about the Green Party candidate, Lynn Kahn? We remember, those who watch us regularly remember, it wasn't too long ago that the Green Party candidate was pulling in some fairly big numbers for
Matt
party.
Funicello, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, got 11% of the vote, and then about 5% 2 years ago. And so I think a lot of people thought that once again, the Green Party candidate might play a major factor in this race. I don't think she's pulled quite those numbers yet. We don't have any polling, so we're not exactly sure. But as far as contributions and in the campaign finances, she hasn't really been able to keep up with either Stefanik or Cobb. Because of the Green Party getting the results they have for the past couple of years, we thought it was important to have her.
You can watch the full New York 21 debate by heading to mountainlake.org. Okay, a few items more that I want to get to. We're in the Lake City of Plattsburgh here. We were here in August to do the story on the Bitcoin moratorium that the city council and the mayor passed. What kind of an update do we have, if any?
And that was 7 months ago. The Plattsburgh was the first city in the nation to pass that moratorium, that type of a moratorium. They've come up with new regulations that they have ready. They're going to have a public hearing this week on those, having to do with noise and fire safety. Mm-hmm. They took care of the issue about these cryptocurrency mining operations using so much power. They set up in small communities like Plattsburgh and Messina because they get dirt cheap electric rates. And that was fine, but when in Plattsburgh they go over a certain limit, then Plattsburgh has to go out and buy power on the open market. So back in January and February when it was so cold, all of a sudden they went over the limit. Ratepayers are like, our bills went up 20, 30, 40%. They dealt with that. The Public Service Commission dealt with that, came up with special rates just for the miners. So that's been taken care of. Now this addresses some of the safety issues when you get so many thousands of small computers together and it gets so warm and hot that they felt they had to deal with issues for the neighbors, but also safety issues when it comes primarily to fire and all the heat that those servers are putting off.
Let's update another story that we did last year. We saw that the number of refugees coming into this community, coming through this community on their way to Champlain, which is about 20 minutes north of
about
Plattsburgh,
right
on the border. We saw the people, you know, going to that line, and it was pretty dramatic video to watch. Are the numbers stronger? Are they weaker?
They're about the same, about 1,700-1,800 per month. The numbers haven't changed. They're still coming up. They're crossing that ditch at Roxham Road. You were there to go into Quebec. The reason they're doing that is if they went to one of the border crossings, they would be turned back under the Safe Third Country Agreement with the U.S. So they know that they have to go and illegally cross into Canada, into Quebec, and seek asylum. The number's about 35,000 now since the beginning of last year. In the beginning, many were Haitians, knowing that they were going to lose their temporary protected status coming up in July of 2019. For the past several months, it's been more immigrants from Africa, primarily Nigeria, who are coming here. They come with visas to the U.S., have no intention of staying, and are going right to Canada to seek political asylum. With the courts there boggled down with so many asylum seekers, it could be two, three, even many years before their cases are actually heard. During that time, Canada takes care of them. They can get work permits, health care, their kids can go to school, they can stay in Canada until their cases are heard.
Finally, speaking of the border, Canada just this month legalized marijuana, just the second country to do so. Adults will be able to carry and share up to 30 grams.
Right, that's about
in public.
60 joints.
Okay.
And in some cases, they'll be allowed to grow a few plants in their homes. Not in Quebec, though. There are some provinces where they won't be able to grow their own.
Well, let's localize it. What does it mean for the North Country,
For the North Country people from New York, Vermont, they can cross the border. They can go to Canada now. If you're of age, you can smoke marijuana there. The big concern is coming back into the U.S. You can't bring marijuana back with you, certainly not in New York. Even in Vermont, where it's legal, you can't cross the federal border where it's illegal, and if you cross and you have pot, you could face possession or even smuggling charges. And the other big issue is for people coming back across the border is if the customs agents ask you, have you smoked marijuana in the past, and you admit to it and say yes, you could be barred from entering the U.S., which means you have to jump through all sorts of hoops to get special permits, and it could cost you hundreds of dollars to get the permits. This is especially for Canadians wanting to come into the U.S. So people that come to the border need to be aware that they can't bring marijuana with them, and they may want to think twice about admitting to smoking marijuana at any time in their lifetime.
Very interesting. We're out of time. Our thanks to Tom Halleck of Mountain Lake PBS. You can watch his show Mountain Lake Journal by going to mountainlake.org. Tom, thanks for the hospitality.
Happy to have you here.
All right, a reminder from us, we held the first TV debate in New York 19, a very important swing seat in the Hudson Valley. You can watch Republican John Faso and Democrat Antonio Delgado face off by heading to our website, nynow.org. I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching. We're going to leave you today with footage from Plattsburgh and the North Country. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation.